God damn it. Okay, there we go.
That is fucking priceless.
That's my one. Hold on a sec, guys.
Okay, folks, welcome to the No Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, as always, please send them to my No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or send me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. By way of introduction, we've got more people on the podcast tonight than we've ever had, so I'm really looking forward to this. Let's go around the table and say hi to everybody. Let's start with Bob. Bob!
Hi, guys. I'm here. It's great to be here. I love this show. I love being on it. And it's good to finally see Jason, or virtually see Jason after, 25 years or something. It's been a very long time, but it's good to see him. Good to see my old comrade Rick, Lenny and Darren. Jeez, you guys, always so enthusiastic. It's great to be here.
Jesus Christ.
I'm stunned.
What the fuck was that?
Thanks, folks.
I was too, but Bob was. He played it perfectly straight. Actually, that was lovely.
That was very sincere, Bob. I'm humbled.
Len, how are you, man? Welcome back.
Great, man. Yeah, and I'm really excited about tonight. And as we said on take one, how you're going to keep control of this is going to be intriguing.
Can we stop making references to the first time I fucked this up, please?
And great to have the regulars and great to see Rick and Jason as well. So this should be a good night.
Darren, how are you, brother?
I'm grand. I'm with Bob there. It's good to see Jason. I haven't seen him in 5 years or something. I can't remember where it went last time I was in Japan. The only time I was in Japan. And I think we talked about having him on the podcast a lot of times, but it's just the time difference over there. It's like 8 hours or something. So it's bad enough.
13,
that it,
I think, something like that.
Yeah, from you, yeah. So it's a difficult one. So it's good that he's in Ontario and he can join tonight. Good to see Rick again, and I'm still waiting for Bob to say something.
I'm just hanging back.
Yeah, don't poke the bear. Don't poke the bear.
He's going to whip that shit out right in the middle of the podcast. Okay, Rick, how are you, man? Thanks for coming on again.
Thank you for having me again. I'm doing good. Good to see everybody. Good that Lenny's back from his training sorte in Thailand. Hope that was good for
Cheers,
you.
Cheers, man. Yeah.
And good to see Jason.
Thanks, man.
And our newest guest on the podcast is Jason now. Jason trained in the same club that Bob, Darren, and I and Rick did coming up through the ranks. He's been in Japan for the last 2 decades or so, but he's back in Peterborough, so we're on the same time zone, so we thought what better opportunity to have him on. Jason, welcome, brother. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, really good. Again, really glad to be on the podcast. I've listened to pretty much all of them. It's been cool to see how it's evolved over the year, so I think it'll be really cool.
Jason, before we start the podcast proper, give us a little bit of Japanese, would you? Because that'd be fun.
Okay. Hajime mashite. Arigato gozaimasu.
Ich ni san shi.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute, guys, real quick about the topic tonight. The topic this evening is inspiration. What inspires us in the martial arts? And I know that in the past podcast, it's very easy to get kind of locked into the tone of negativity. And that's unfortunate because I know we all love the martial arts. That's the only reason we continue to do it after decades and decades. That's the only reason we come on these podcasts, is so we can talk about that which we love. And I will take all the blame for leading the charge in terms of being cynical. So I'm really looking forward to this topic tonight. We're talking about what inspires us. Before we get into the actual talking points, does anyone have anything they want to say about this topic in general?
I do admit that I, for the first time, saw the topics about 5 minutes before we started. But
that's okay. Throw that in there.
I can riff along and everything's fine. And we're doing one topic at a time, and I know what the first one is, so we can go along and I'll read the next one in a few minutes.
I got a question for you guys before we get started. It seems to be my go-to position to be cynical these days, and I kind of hate that about myself. I miss the youthful exuberance I used to have, and I miss the I don't know if naive is the right word or just the untried, joyful perspective I used to have on the martial arts. And to be honest, I still have it about training. Nothing makes me happier, and Jason can attest to this, than getting out in the dojo floor and just working out. But I do tend to feel pretty darn cynical these days. Do you guys have that feeling?
If I want to jump in there, do you think it's just something that once you've been around the block so many times, it's hard to find something that's new, interesting, inspirational, or motivational, other than just the love of working out? Because when you're going through the steps, like right from what inspired you to join and all your training throughout, there always seems to be so many new things that really inspire you to continue on. It's not like, I'm not saying there's nothing new. You can be around the block as many times as you want. There's always going to be something new to learn. But somewhere along the line, I think most people would kind of lose the inspiration to continue to learn, because it's like, why do I need to learn something new? Like, I'm not going to get in a fight. It's not an art, or, you know, something like that. So do you think with what you just said, it's just not your age, but the fact you've done so much already in the martial arts that it's hard to get inspired to continue doing the same thing or even trying to do something new?
It is, but part of what you just said, youthful exuberance, is the fact that none of us are youthful anymore. You've learned an awful lot. You've seen an awful lot. You've seen a lot of good. You've seen a lot of bad. You've seen a lot of indifference. You sort of get over that youthful exuberance, but you don't have to lose all the exuberance for it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's still, like Darren said, you can be around the block 17 times and there might be something pop up new. So there's always something to learn every time you do something.
I think as well, Mitch, like when we all started out, you're talking, you know, decades ago, and there wasn't as much information about other styles or people taking their own slant on things as there was now. All you got to do is click on the internet, turn on the TV, and, you know, we get access to it. I mean, we spent ages ago, we went on to a podcast where we picked videos of basically people that broke our hearts looking at the standards, the way they let them slip. So it's hard not to get cynical when that's in your face as much, where it wasn't back in the day. You learned your style, guys went in, we mixed it up. It wasn't diluted, it wasn't bastardized, it wasn't, you know, detrimental. You didn't have the likes of Dillman with his no touch. You didn't have all this kind of hogwash that evolved. And it's hard when that's thrown in your face so wantonly, not to get cynical.
I want to answer that. For me, my level of cynicism, look, I don't take anything I see on the internet seriously. I can't. I've been disappointed enough to find out that a lot of the stuff that I thought was true in the input I get from the internet wasn't true. So I tend to take everything I see, videos, whatever, with a grain of salt. My cynicism, Jesus Christ, I thought we were talking about inspiration, and here we are talking about my cynicism.
Oh, let's get in, yeah.
But I just to set it up, my cynicism springs from my personal experiences. It's those things that I deal with day to day, or week to week, or month to month, or tournament to tournament that sort of breaks my martial arts heart. So, Jason, you haven't said anything. What do you think, man?
Yeah, to be honest, I've never ever had that kind of feeling. That sort of, you're talking about cynicism for martial arts.
You're like 11 or something. Like, how fucking old are you?
46.
Oh, Jesus but, Christ.
I'm not the baby. I'm not the baby anymore.
Nice.
Oh, we got someone younger, Len.
I've been kind of lucky because I've been able to train, you know, many places all around the world. And I don't know. I've never ever had that feeling that you just described, Mitch, about, you know, being down in the dumps about training or martial arts or what have you.
Jace, let me ask you a question. A lot of my cynicism comes from the political side, the hierarchy, the politics of the martial arts. And that comes from being a part of the running of a club or being in on that level. The clubs you've trained in around the world, were you a student at that club? Have you been involved in the running of a club before?
No, I've never been in. Well, out west, I was helping out a lot and teaching a lot of classes. But the other places, no, just as a student. But I guess I can see where you're coming from about the, especially if you're running a club. But for me, you know, I've never had any of the, you know, the sort of bad feelings that you mentioned.
Bob, anything to add before we get started on the actual talk?
There aren't many advantages to being retired from the martial arts, but there is at least one, and that is I look back so fondly on everything that I've done, and I have none of the cynicism, because one of the contributing reasons of me retiring was the low quality and the cynicism that I had been developing, and now that I'm out, it's all good memories for me. So I'm lucky.
Okay, let's jump into the first talking point. And I'm going to amend it just a little bit. The actual question is, what inspired you to join the martial arts? And I'm going to add a little addendum to that, which is, once you were in, what inspired you to stay? Because we all know that the reasons you join are often different than the reasons you stay. So let's explore both topics, but one at a time. What inspired you to join?
This is the cheesiest but most honest reason, and you're all going to laugh at this one. What inspired me to join? I was overweight ginger, and my name was Leonard, and I was the victim of people picking on me, basically.
And how is that different than now?
I'm gray. I'm not ginger anymore. I'm gray. That was the main reason for joining that. And when I get in there, and after a few months, found that, hey, I'm not too shoddy at this. I can find my feet, and I was managed to stand up for myself against guys who were training a while. That said, okay, I want to go further in this. So that's short and simple.
Rick.
Well, you've heard my story before, in a way. It was my brother was in the club, and he kept bugging me, and I decided I'd try it in 73, and I went up for a couple of classes, since I used to do these private classes. I did that, didn't really stick with me, and then the next year I decided I would get back into it, and I got into it, and I haven't been out of it since. But it was, the inspiration was from my brother. Now,
but talk about that a little bit. But talk about, like, what... I'll be perfectly honest. The reason I want this podcast tonight is because I'm feeling pretty bleak these days, and I'm looking for something to bring me a little bit of joy, a little bit of inspiration. What about Tom and his training inspired you to join?
What about Tom? Well,
that's your brother.
Other than the fact that he was starting to kick at my head. You know, stuff like that. But
I wanted to defend myself from my abusive brother.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what I'm looking for, man.
No. But he was
too close to home.
Really,
exactly.
Too close to home. He really liked it. And at the time, they were just starting into all the karate movies and Bruce Lee and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, that kind of piqued my interest there. And then he had started at the club. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool. And then there was that year in between, but when I got back in, it was more of a thing of, I need to settle down, I need a direction, and I wanted martial arts, because I thought it would work out. And once I got in, and I started working out, I just seemed to wrap myself around it, because once I got into it, I liked the discipline, I liked the work, and it gave you the schedule. You, two or three nights a week, you went down, you forgot about everything else. And for me, it actually did. I could go in and I could work out and I'd forget about everything else. So it started out as being very good for my mental health.
Awesome. Yeah. Darren, what do you think?
Jeez. I remember when I first saw it, because I started when I was a kid, and I actually have no memory of why I started. So I don't think there was any inspiration for me to start. It was just,
well, your dad was a head instructor.
Well, that's what I mean. My dad had the club, so I just went. Because I'd go for a couple of years, and I'd quit for a couple of years, and then go for a couple of years. But it's kind of one of those things that was always there. It's not till, say, maybe in my 20s that I actually remember the inspiration. And my inspiration goes to the second question, so I won't get into that, because it'll lead into the second question, and we haven't heard everybody else. But it was, at the time, you just kind of did it, because that's, it was just naturally what you did. It's like working on a farm or something. If you have a family farm, whether you like it or not is irrelevant. That's just what you're doing. And then there was probably a time in my early to mid-20s where the inspiration kind of kicked in, and then I kind of haven't looked back since then. And I'll get to that in the second question. So so as far as the first question, what inspired me to join, I don't remember, because I was a kid, and I'm not even sure there was any inspiration at the time. You didn't know any better.
I think you and Jason are the only two on the podcast who both started when you were kids. So, yeah. Jason, what got you in?
Well, my parents actually got my brother in to start, to help him out with coordination and things like that. And I guess, apparently, I don't really remember, but Mark Bell saw me sitting in the hallway and said to my parents, "Oh, how about him?" And so that's kind of how it started. So like Darren, you know, I was in for a few years as a kid, but then I fell out. But at about maybe 12 or 13, it might sound a little funny, but I was really into, like, you know, martial arts movies like Bruce Lee or Van Damme and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of got back into it. And what kept me in, I don't know. It just felt like I couldn't leave, in a sense. I guess that's kind of it.
I can relate to that you can't leave sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
That link to the martial arts movies, that doesn't sound silly or funny at all. I know that that's part of what got Bob in, so let's go to Bob. Bob.
That's exactly right. My story sounds exactly like Lenny's. I was picked on as a kid. Saw Bruce Lee movie, and I was a lost cause after that. It's a formulaic, simple story, and it's mine.
No, I was going to ask Darren there, that the fact that his dad was the head instructor, did he kind of push in that direction, or was it your own decision, or was it kind of, listen, you're coming down here to try this, or was it left up to yourself?
I can't remember. That's fair enough. I honestly can't remember. I know there was times, I remember being not quite a teenager, say somewhere between 10 and maybe 13 or 14, he'd want me to go up and we'd be arguing about something else. And I remember wanting to go up to the club and saying no, just to spite him. So yeah. I probably missed out on a lot of classes because whatever we were arguing about, I didn't want to get in the car with him and go up to the club. So I'd be like, no, don't want to go up tonight, even though I did want to go up. So there was a lot of just ridiculous childish stuff that was kind of going on at the time.
You sound like you were a lousy kid.
No, that came later. That came later.
Now, Mitch, okay, what about you?
I've mentioned this before. I wasn't inspired to go to the club. I was coerced. So,
hey. You're conned.
I was out drinking and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning, which was a thing I didn't do very often. So Bob wakes me up and goes, "Hey, going up to the club." I'm like, "I don't want to go up to the club. I'm tired. I'm all fucked up." And he goes, no, come on. So I said, "Look, leave me alone. I'll go up on Monday." And I went up on Monday, and that's what got me there. What I'm really interested in is what kept us there. And a couple of us have already touched on it. And you know what? Just because my what got me there story was so short and boring, I'll go first on what kept me there. I never felt more included. The one thing I'll say about that club and any martial arts club that I've ever, whether the instructors are good or bad or whatever, the one thing I can say that I've experienced universally with martial arts clubs is if you're ready to get on the floor and train, you'll be accepted. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter your background, gender, ethnicity, none of that matters. All you have to do is want to train and you will be accepted. And that, for me, was an incredibly cathartic and unusual experience. It was just the acceptance I felt at the club. I love working out. I love the whole physicality behind it.
You had been weight training for years before then.
For years, yeah, for sure. And I remember the first couple of classes I took, Mark Bell was like, "You're going to have to give up the weights if you want to do this." And I'm like, "No, no, I'm not going to do that." And it turns out I didn't have to do that. I weight trained all through my martial arts career. But even with that comment, that sounds kind of not accepting of who I was, I still never felt more accepted in any kind of social environment I'd ever been in up to that point. So that's kind of what kept me there.
Again, I'm going to echo Lenny and say that people started making some comments and I started getting a little bit of confidence. And that and then the fascination itself with the techniques. That's, you know, after a few months or a year, you start thinking about the mechanics of the techniques. And it grips your imagination, and you become obsessed with it. It's like a magnificent obsession, and that's what it became for me.
What a great phrase, magnificent obsession. Jason, what kept you once you joined?
Yeah, kind of similar to you, Mitch. Like the the inclusivity of it was kind of, it almost felt like a family, sort of. And it's, well, that was one of the reasons. Of course, the physicality of it was another one. But again, it just felt like I couldn't leave. It kind of felt like, well, you know, if I left, I'd be letting everyone down, kind of.
It sounds weird. Cult. I don't want to dip into the negative here because I'm feeling a little bit better after this conversation, but Bob makes an interesting point. I never felt like I'd be letting anybody down. I just, but then that could just be reflective of my own lack of self-esteem.
Letting yourself down, Nomish.
I don't even know if that's true. You know what? This is a really, first talking point. This is a really complex question. that's really interesting. I've never looked at it from that perspective before. I just know that when I joined, I felt a connectivity, whether it was to the working out or to the intellectualization of the technique or just feeling inclusive. It might be all of those things in equal measure. Len, what kept you there once you joined?
Yeah, similar to what Bob said, first of all, you know, you're taking a few comments. I always liked to train hard, and the sensei we had at the time and the crew that were training there, they were hard as nails. I remember, I think it was 2 weeks in, I got up and a guy used to train, I don't even know where he is now, Tony. Tony was an ex-Hell's Angel, and he was battle hardened. And we get out to spar, and I wasn't sure what the concept of sparring was in the martial arts club compared to boxing. And my first question was, what's the contact like here? To which I got this smack in the face from these big 12-ounce gloves. And he went, yeah, pretty much this. And I thought, okay,
let me ask you something. How long after you joined had you said that?
Probably I was sparring the second night I was there, actually.
So a lot of people, especially in today's environment, when asking the question, what's the contact like, and being answered with a punch in the face, a lot of people wouldn't take that kindly. What was it that made that circumstance connect to you?
I think it was a combination of having done a week or two with the people, as exactly what Jason said. It was like a big family. There was a great vibe in it. I kind of knew the sensei before I went to that club. He started off as kind of a semi-friend of the family, and to this day we're great friends. I knew that it was, although it was a punch in the face, it was a tongue-in-cheek kind of, there was no malice in it. Even there was a smile on his face when he did it, but it was, you know, that might sound kind of contradictory. But
it's
you
amazing
know.
The stuff we martial artists
do. Yeah, it was a friendly
slap
punch.
Slap up alongside the head, but it was very nice.
It was a well-intentioned smack. Yes. Inside the head.
It was full of good intention.
You know. We're a sick lot, man. Holy shit.
But I mean, he was perfectly like, that's how hard, and by the way, you can hit me back now. Within a month or two, it was role reversal, and he was kind of, you know, okay, you've learned now. So yeah, it was the inclusivity, the family vibe, and the fact everybody trained really hard. That hooked me straight away.
Darren, I'm curious, especially about you, because your father was the head instructor, and I get that you went up because that was what you did. But there came a point when you had to separate from that, but something kept you working out. What was it?
Yeah, I think Jason, a couple of you, I think it was you and Jason that touched on it with regard to just the family kind of setting, the belonging, the camaraderie, and everything that goes with it. And I think it was kind of like a home. So even if you didn't like the art of karate, or at the time you didn't like doing kata or whatever it was, You still, if you didn't show up, you felt like you missed something. So even when I got away from it, say for a year, there was always a longing to go back. It's almost like leaving your hometown or your home country or something like that, and there's always that kind of longing to return. But because it was just down the road, it was easy enough to return. When you look back, because I've trained at a lot of different clubs, and by what, I can't remember who said it, it might have been Mitch, where he said, once you're on the floor and training, you're accepted. As long as you're putting your work in and you're not hitting anybody else ridiculously, you're not being a dick, but you're still working hard, you're accepted, you instantly become part of the clique. But there's not many clubs I trained at where the clique extends outside of the actual dojo or the training center. Every once in a while, yeah, you meet people that you train with over a couple of years and you end up going out for a drink. But I remember growing up, and never mind the drinking aside, just there was always kind of some sort of club parties, there was Christmas parties, there was summer barbecues and stuff, everybody going out after the classes and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't just workout partners. It extended beyond that. And it made it like one big family. And even beyond that, like a lot of the higher ranks when I was a kid used to babysit me. So if my parents went away on holidays, I'd get shuffled off to one of the brown or black belt houses for a week. And they'd look after me.
No, what did Rick do to you?
No, that's just the way it was. So that's what I mean about extending. And I remember if anything went wrong at your place, if something broke down, the club would go over to help you out. You wouldn't call your friends. You call the club people. And everybody at the club, if something went wrong, they just called somebody else at the club. And obviously you had your workmates and your friends outside of the dojo, but that just seemed to be the first port of call. Because there could have been up to, I think at one time there was 150 people in the club. So there was always someone you could call from the club to come over and help you out. And it was just like a big extended family. Obviously, when it's that big, there wouldn't be people that trained hard. There wouldn't be people that were accepted on the floor and all that sort of stuff. But there was enough people that were there that it was just like one big family. And I think that breeds just going back even just for that. Like, of course, I like all the aspects of training, and that would lead me back as well. If you didn't like the club, and remember, there was probably only one or two clubs in that town. So it wasn't like you could just wander off somewhere else and check it out.
Bob, you haven't said much. After what got you to the club, what kept you there?
Well, I mentioned before, what kept me there was that I got a bit of a confidence out of it, and I became fascinated with the art itself. But I just want to put in a comment. It's kind of a reflection of me being a bit of a freak, I think, because the feeling of family, I never felt it. I never felt it. I was always... I don't know whether it was my self-esteem being so low, but I always felt like a bit of a stranger when I was getting changed to get ready for class. I felt inadequate. That's just one aspect that didn't really apply to me, that's all. That's just me as a bit of an outsider.
So, Bob, put the family thing aside, but what did keep you there? Was it the intellectual attachment to technique?
Yeah, that's it. There? Well, I guess it was the fact, like, I was a kid. I was 15 when I started. I was older than Darren and Jason. But it was a combination of the fact that I was getting confidence and being extremely interested in the techniques themselves. So I conflated the two. And I had to continue.
I kind of wondered that myself.
I'll third that. What the fuck does conflated mean?
I mixed the two things together in my mind.
Okay. Jason, what's conflated in Japanese?
You couldn't just say mixed them up. You got to say conflated.
I'm sorry for having a vocabulary.
Hey,
Lenny's looking that word up as we speak.
No.
I'm not going to self-aggrandize about it. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Fucking hell. This is really interesting. Bob seems to be the only one of us who didn't feel a sense of, and look, don't get me wrong, I'm not dumping on anybody, but that sense of family seems to be a fairly strong thread through this conversation, except with Bob. But I don't think Bob, please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think your emotional connection to training is any less strong because of that, right?
Jesus, I was obsessed with nothing else for, what, 30 years?
Yeah, and you trained in more than one style, too, so three styles, wasn't it?
Four. Yeah, but the thing my personality is such that I was a sort of felt like an outsider in all of them.
Isn't that almost more a pure perspective? Because your connection to the martial arts was based on the martial arts, not an extraneous perspective like the rest of us. We were like, oh, I felt included. I'm not making fun of anybody, so please forgive me if it's coming across that way, but a lot of us have already said that we continued because we felt that sense of family, we felt that sense of inclusivity. But Bob seems to be the only one so far who said that he has continued on
after he started
because of the sheer art of the sheer love of the art itself.
What kept us there? Since then, we've evolved into, you know.
I have to kind of hook in with Bob a little bit on this. After a while, yes, the feeling of family and inclusivity was incredibly important. but very quickly the desire to figure this shit out took me over, and that's what carried me on through the decades. So
I think I'll have to agree with that one.
Just quickly on my part, things that kept me in was against the same family and the camaraderie and all that kind of stuff. But like Bob said something about, that sounds like a cult. But is it a cult when it's basically your own obsession and your own addiction to whatever it is you're doing? I mean, no one was telling us that we had to stay there. No one was saying, oh, you can't leave the club. Everybody came and went quite often. But it's our own commitment to what we were doing that basically, and he's right, made it kind of a cult because you then didn't want to not go.
My cult comment was just based on the context of the conversation at the time. It wasn't meant to be an accusation at all.
It does actually seem like a cult, but if it is a cult, it's a self-imposed one. It's not imposed from without. It's not like somebody telling you. You do it to yourself because you want to keep it.
The thing is, Rick, go to any cult that exists by popular definition and ask members of that cult if they're there because they have to be, and they'll say no, I'm there because I want to be.
How many of those cults will allow you to go to another cult without any problem at all? We will let another club.
Hang on.
You guys started the club. Dara's been in all kinds of clubs. Jason's been in all kinds of clubs. Is it all the same cult?
How many students were forbidden from going to another club?
Somewhere.
Yeah, no, he's right, but there's still the come and go. Like, we're getting off topic there, but
thank you.
I understand what Richie was saying, and it makes perfect sense. And it was kind of a retort against what Bob had said, where Bob wasn't really necessarily referring to it in that kind of context.
And fair enough. So, I think we need to draw a line between something that attracts us that feeds us and a cult. We already did the cult thing. Let's leave that behind for now, and let's move on.
The only last question or last comment I got is to Lenny.
Yeah, yeah.
He was talking about the guy that hit him was a biker. We had George Lobb. He was the president of our local motorcycle gang, and he was in the club for quite a while. We have that motorcycle, but it's the same thing. And at his funeral, that's what his wife said. He had two families. First, it was the biker club. Then it was Jushin.
Okay, so we're going to finish off the first talking point after 47 minutes. Anybody?
Would have been 57, only someone messed up the start. Fuck you.
I would love to do one of these podcasts where we do the where we can get through the actual talking points because we never do. I think we're going to do I think we're going to do a podcast called Potpourri, which is all of the questions that we never got to in all of the 20 podcasts before us. I'm really actually quite looking forward to the second question. So,
and pause. Sorry to interject.
Oh, pause. Go, Darren.
It's the hour mark. You know what happens at the hour mark, buddy.
Darren's bladder is taking over the podcast.
And his glass is empty.
All right, let's take a break, pour a drink, and we'll get back to the second point.
Cheers. All right, guys. Not the second half of the podcast.
The second question. All right. Okay. All right, folks, we're back from the break. So let's move on to the second question. And I have very high hopes for this question. Are there any individuals who inspired you through your training? You don't have to name anybody if you're not comfortable naming who they are for whatever reason. But let's take a moment to pontificate and maybe pay homage to the people that inspired us as we were training. So, Jason, you go first.
Yeah, well, I guess to start off with, it would have to be Mark Bell. He was always really solid with me. Coming up through the years, he kind of felt like a bit of a father figure in a sense. But apart from that, I'd say it was all the other black belts at the club, because I think we were very unique in, I guess, our club, because every black belt was kind of different. They all had their different sort of personality or character or different...
idiosyncrasies rather than weirdness.
Okay, idiosyncrasies. But so that was really cool. I really enjoyed that. Like and there was always a mix of black belts. Each week you'd have someone else, a different person teaching. So that was really cool. I think the other thing for inspiration would just be seeing people who are better than you. There have been so many times I've walked off the floor, you know, thinking, wow, you know, this guy here, he's, how can I get to that level? That sort of thing, I think, is inspirational. It's also a bit debilitating discouraging as well. But seeing people better than you kind of inspires you to improve yourself.
Len, anyone specifically who inspires you or has inspired you?
When I started training, there was a 15-year-old kid who trained at our club, and actually happened to be John Kavanagh, who's Conor McGregor's coach now. He was just, as a karate practitioner, he was phenomenal. And his ability to analyze someone's movement and break it down and look at someone's strengths and weaknesses at 15 years of age was unbelievable. And he came to us, like, I was 88. I was 70. I was only 2 years older than him, and he was straight over to me and giving me tips and this, that, and the other. He was brown belt at that stage. He'd been training since he was a kid, and he was just a mind of information. And it didn't surprise me in later years to see him come out as well. They all recognize him as a world class coach now, and he's in high demand. And he was massively inspirational back then. And I still have a lot of respect for the guy.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo what Jason said because we came from a small town and we didn't have the internet back then, so the only people you saw other than who you trained with would be at tournaments. And because the tournament is a quick kind of one-day affair, and if you're concentrating on your own division, other than watching the black belts, which used to happen at night, you really had no other inspiration other than what was at your club. That was highly inspirational, because anybody older, as Jason said, like the black belt, not even the black belt, if I watched somebody that was just a belt or two above that was really working hard, that was an inspiration, because I'm competitive in just about everything, from board games to sitting in a sauna to like ridiculous stuff. So
how do you be competitive sitting in a sauna?
Hey, don't get him started.
Don't go there.
Just one thing, no.
You stay in longer than anybody else.
That's exactly what I'll do. And I will be so uncomfortable, and I'll be willing to die, but I will not leave until the other guy
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you.
So, but just by nature, if I watch somebody that was working out really hard, it just inspired me to try to work out, at least try to work out equally as hard. And that was the thing. And without getting cheesy, it'd be basically everybody on this podcast, because you just go through stages. Yeah. Everybody, bar from Jason, say, was a higher rank than me. But then even take Jason. I remember Jason went away, I think he was in Japan for a while or something, and I was doing a grappling class, and I thought I knew everything about grappling. And then Jason came in and took the class one day and showed me a wealth of stuff that I didn't even know. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy's inspiring. Anybody that does something that you're not sure of or you haven't learned was an inspiration going through the thing. And I wouldn't say it's somebody better than me, because that's not an inspiration, because there's just way too many people that would be better. So just having someone better than me is not an inspiration. You have to have so many other qualities. Like there's got to be a personality, there's got to be a teacher. Like Lenny's another one. You go up to his club and it's an inspiration up there. I go up there and it's like, okay, I know this and I know that. And then you get in there, I don't know that, and I don't know this. And even if I did know it, I'm not doing it as good as someone else, or I don't have the conditioning of someone else. So just almost anywhere you go, there's some sort of inspiration that you can take from it. But it has to be, it's not, like I said, it's not someone better than you, because there's always someone better than you. That's not an inspiration. It's their will, their drive, their passion, their teaching ability, their knowledge, they're willing to help other people. Those are all characteristics that would inspire me.
The things that inspire people are spread across a fairly wide breadth of perspectives. Like Darren just said, it's ability, perspective, teaching skill, blah, 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 blah. So this is not a simple question, because you can be inspired by different people for different things. I've been inspired by people of significantly lower rank than I am. And it has nothing to do with their ability. It has to do with their attitude and their perspective. So I really like that perspective that Darren just laid out. I think that's really telling. Rick, what do you think? Who's inspired you, other than
dozens.
Me?
Dozens. Actually, Darren wasn't wrong in that, man, because the guys I worked out with at the time all inspired me. Even you, you were coming up behind us, but your dedication.
I started when you were a knee, Dan. I'm sure I inspired you greatly.
I know. But maybe not when you were a yellow belt. But you got the blue and brown, and you were right into it. And like he said, a lot of the guys inspired us. So did Bob, so did Darren. But the guys that I was looking at was like you guys. Well, you might not know Mitch, but Steve Burns and you know, Paul White and even my brother. They all worked out very, very hard. They were all very, very good, and they were all above me, way above me. So I always had something to look for. The other thing is, I like Jason's thing with Sensei. Sensei taught each of his belts, like he basically when you were beginning, he taught everybody much the same. Then you got to blue brown. He started actually pushing you in your own direction. He didn't try to make me into a high kicker. He didn't try to make Rick Doyle into a great puncher. Wasn't a bad puncher, but he pushed him to kick because he had the hips for it. And he was a very, like Lenny was saying about the coach, it's a rare thing to find someone who can see your abilities and push you in that direction and help you improve on what you're good at, help you with what you're not good at, but really push what you're good at. And I like what you said, Mitch, with lower ones. I mean, even a couple of the kids that we've had in our class the last couple of years, you get a 12-year-old in there, and they come in, and they're just gung-ho, and they want to be a sponge. Even that's inspiring, man.
Bob, what do you think?
Looking back, it's been a parade of inspirational people. There's no phase of my martial arts life that wasn't filled with floats in that parade. Back when I was a kid and first starting out, yeah, I'll say it, Rick Mullen as a brown belt just inspired me because he was the enforcer. You know how brown belts were back then, and Rick Mullen epitomized that. Rick, help me with Bob Linkert. That name comes to mind. You remember that guy? And as a hard fighter, I remember some green belt soccer player. I forget the fuck what his name was, but he inspired me. Rick Doyle, major inspirational figure for me, just because of his demeanor and his kicks. And then after that, like for me, black belts were out of my league. Inspiration wasn't what I got from them. They were the teachers. They were the upper stratosphere, and so they weren't inspiring in that sense. But after that, after black belt level, judo, Mitch, Carl Steele Jr., Carl Jr., and what's that big guy's name? Jim, what's his name? And in Aikido, the black belts who took me and helped me with techniques. It's just an endless parade of people who I look back on and it fills my heart whenever I think about them. I'm afraid I can't do them justice by remembering all their names. It's crazy. Oh yeah, Mitch, you inspire me too. Okay. Is Mitch there?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm here. I had my mic turned off. Fuck off. All right, I'm back now. And in response to what Bob just said, give me a fucking break. But having said that, the categories of inspiration are endless. In terms of teaching, say what you will, I think Mark Bell was one of the most strategically brilliant instructors, strategically smart instructors I've ever had. He knew how to leverage everybody's abilities and what they're good at. And I think there was
not to quibble, but... Is that an inspiration? Like, did that inspire you?
It inspires me to look at the students that I have the great good fortune of teaching, to look at their strengths outside of the little bubble that I see the martial arts through. This person does this well. Maybe I should forget about what I think's important and look to what they seem to be good at. That's a pretty profound perspective in my head. And I have to associate that with Mark Bell for sure. In terms of training, I was inspired very strongly by a lot of the people on this podcast, and I'm going to go through them one at a time. The first time I met Darren, I was a orange belt, maybe a green belt at the club. And I was working at a restaurant, so I couldn't make it up to class. But I would always come to the club after my shift was over, and I'd get the last 10 or 15 minutes. And one night I showed up, and Darren was there. And Mark Bell walked up to me and goes, "Yeah, this is the guy. You need to look at him. This guy's good. This is the guy you should be looking at." Ever since then, I've always looked at Darren in a very and rightfully so. Not just because Mark Bell said so. I've trained with Darren for decades in various and sundry circumstances, and he deserved that kudo. He deserved that reputation, and I will always look at Darren as a very strong inspiration, and just in terms of something to measure myself against. But watching Bob train, he's the one who got me into the martial arts in the first place. I always loved Bob's sense of calm and Bob's sense of rationality in his training. He was never one to get upset or angry, but he was one to push you as hard as anyone would. But he would push you from a place of rationality and a place of intellectual perspective. And I always admired that. Rick is and I say this, people will laugh, but I say this Uh-oh. in a very heartfelt way. This guy was a fucking gorilla, man. And see, people are laughing, but I don't mean it in a funny way. You get in the floor with Rick, and I get that we're all getting older and none of us can do what we could before, but you get in the floor with Rick Mullen when he was 35, you better have your shit together or he's going to kick your ass across that dojo, man. The workout ethic that I adopted was based largely on watching Rick train. Jason has the best I'll fuck you up face I've ever seen.
That last night.
Exactly. He's standing last night at the grading, he's standing in front of a yellow belt, and I'm looking at him, and Jason's got his face dipped down, his eyes are looking up like through his eyebrows, and the look in his face says, "I'm gonna fuck you up." And I got to admit, man, the thing I love about Jason is we get on the floor and we get in front of each other and we, and please, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I perceive this differently than you, but we both know we're going to go hard. We both know we're going to throw some techniques, man. And there aren't many people you can do that with. There aren't many people you can stand on the floor with and go, "Let's just throw. Let's just fucking do this. Let's work out. I don't care about anything other than the intensity with which we are working out." Yeah. And to round out the conversation, Lenny, I really like your hair. All right, now I'm gonna step outside this circle. There have been people who have inspired me outside of the circle of people that I train with regularly. I went up to a jiu-jitsu class. I'm actually ashamed and embarrassed that I don't remember this guy's name. But he ran a club. He's in Northern Ontario. I don't even remember the little town he trains in. But I went to one of his classes. I can't even remember what brought me there. But oh my God, this guy was one of the best instructors I've ever seen. He was so excited and so into what he was doing and so forgiving of people who weren't up to the speed that he thought they should be. But he was so encouraging. The inspiration that I get from various people, I'm so glad we're doing this podcast. It does my heart good to remember the hundreds, and maybe hundreds is an exaggeration, the dozens of people who inspired me over the years on different levels. And I think we can all agree, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but we all draw inspiration from a million different little places. You know what I mean? So that's a very profound... All of those things were very profound for me in terms of their impact. Okay, was there anyone we haven't talked to? And I want to say one thing, Lenny. I made the joke about your hair. I'm not inspired by your hair.
There'll be something really wrong with you if you were.
But I will tell you this. I talked to Jason last night. we're planning a trip to Ireland next year.
Ah, yes.
First on my list of things to do is to come up to your club and work out, brother.
Yes,
because absolutely. I loved that workout we had back in 2017.
Well, we're going to take it to another level now.
Honestly, man, the people I respect the most are the people I draw inspiration from, and I can't count the number of those people that exist in my lexicon, so this is a hard question for me. Did we miss anybody?
Can I just say, it's very you've mentioned it many times in the podcast, it's very humbling for you here to hear you speak of my club, so highly, Mitch, so thank you.
Lenny, your club was great, man. I totally Cheers, second what Mitch said, and I'm really looking forward to really coming over there and seeing you guys again. And also just like you and other students, and everything was just so nice, so... I don't know, so positive
nice.
Or...
You're all so nice and lovely and pretty.
But it was just a really cool atmosphere, and I'm looking forward to coming back.
Hopefully this is good the next time. Make sure you bring Darren with you.
Just to carry on with that, because, like, if we were talking about the whole family thing and what kept you in martial arts and stuff like that, it's actually been a few years since I actually regularly participated in any club over here, and the only club thus far that I feel comfortable at is going up to Lenny's. Now, I haven't been up there in a while, just I've had injuries and I'm out of shape and stuff like that, but that's an inspiration. I'm not following it up, but that's inspiring me to try to get back in shape and try to get back up there and try to start training again. And I think when you get to a certain age and you've kind of seen everything there is to see, it's nice to see that there is a club or an instructor that's inspiring you to keep going past your prime, just to keep up some semblance of, call it maintenance or just interest, or, you know, just doing whatever you can practice at the stage you're at. I'm not going to go up to some competitive MMA class right now because I don't fit into that thing. So you want to go up to a class that's still going to push you to your limits. It's not to the point where everybody has an ego because they're trying to get into the UFC. It's like everybody's up there for different reasons, but you're still getting pushed.
I want to leverage off a little bit of what Darren just said. There are a number of clubs in Southern Ontario that our club in Peterborough is friendly with. And I've gone to work out at a number of them over the years. There aren't many of them that inspire me to keep training. Like, there aren't many that I go, I got to go back there and work out again because that was awesome. This is a good one because this requires a certain perspective for all of us to adopt, and I'm not sure it's a perspective that we're good at adopting. Do you think that you yourself, whether by design or happenstance, have inspired anybody? Has anybody said to you, hey, you've inspired me? And if they have, what do you think about that? Do you think there's a responsibility to act in a certain way because of that?
You're separating on the dojo floor and off the dojo floor, correct?
Just martial arts related. Beyond that, I'm not making any delineations.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got a lot to contribute to this topic, but I hesitate to because it may not be shared by many people here. Have I inspired anybody? You know what? That's a great question because nobody has come up to me and said, you inspired me. Oh, God. How long did we...
Bob's torturing himself.
Mitch, for how long did we have that club in wherever it was, High Park?
Well, you ran it for like 12 years and I helped you for the last 12. five or six. So
that wasn't that long.
It was a few years.
And there were a lot, we had a lot of children, and presumably they look up to you and you inspire them, but no child will come up and say, you're very inspirational, and no adult has, which makes me start to think that maybe I wasn't a very good teacher, but besides that, I hope, all I have is hope, but... do you think there's a responsibility to conduct yourself? I 100%. I'm way behind that concept. You have a responsibility to conduct yourself properly, and part of my, like, Mitch, I share your frustration with the fact that so comparatively few head instructors take that responsibility seriously. I keep coming back to the Kendo Club example that I trained at for a couple of years, they were paragons of virtue. There was no, they had social events, but they were piddly, like child-friendly social events. They weren't, you know, you didn't go out drinking with the instructors. You didn't, there was a sharp delineation between the instructors and the students, and socially, they were kept way apart. And I can't help but be a fan of that.
Okay. I think what Bob said actually is pretty spot on, especially with the thing about with children. Like, you know, you're never going to have a child, as Bob said, come up to you and say, oh, you know, you really inspired me. Because children, I don't think have, well, I guess they don't really have the concept of that. But you could take it from, I guess you could view it from another way. Like, there were often times at the club where kids would come up to me and how can I say? It just seemed like they were really enjoyed having me, you know, take a class with them or do lines with them or the, you know, one kid in particular I can remember. He had like a kind of a handicap, a physical disability, but you know he would always come up to me and we'd always, you know, do lines or do whatever. So I guess, and he stuck around, you know, was I inspiring to him? Well, I can't say for sure, but you know, it seemed like, you know, he stuck around and he was always, you know, really happy to come up and talk to me. And I guess it's kind of hard to say whether, you know, you inspired, especially with kids, but just sort of watching their behavior around you might be able to kind of answer that question, I guess.
Okay, so Darren, take a shot at the question. Do you feel that you've inspired anybody in the martial arts? And the second part of the question is, how much responsibility do we as black belts or we as long-term practitioners have to conduct ourselves in a certain way with the understanding that we might be inspiring somebody?
In answer to the first question, no one has come up and said, yeah, here, I like what you're doing, you're inspiring me, and blah, blah, blah. So that aside, I think if you're going through the training or instruction or anything like that, you're not doing it for any kudos or anything like that. You're just doing it because that's what you do and you love it. You don't need someone to come back. It's nice for them to come back and say something, but you don't need it. So nobody's ever said that. I haven't gone looking for it. It doesn't bother me that I've never been told. I'd have to say 100%. I think just by the very nature of the progression of the arts, there is an innate responsibility to just not be a dick and try to inspire people or try to lead by example and stuff like that. I think that's in the ethos of martial arts in general. I think it's buried in the ethos that's what you're supposed to do. And I think even more so today, it's more important to keep up that whole, you know, leading by example and not being a dick and trying to inspire people to be the best they can be, regardless of any inhibitions or disabilities or anything like that. 100% on that. I think it's a definite responsibility.
Okay, Len, what do you think?
I've never had somebody tell me directly I inspired them. Obviously, I'm dealing with so many kids in the club. Yeah, I have parents come and say it to me. It never really sits well with me because I don't do pray as well because I'm passing on what I learned and someone else going to pass it on eventually. You know, you're only minding the position for the next person before they take it on. It's something that I never overly comfortable with. You know, we were banging on recently about me being in Thailand last week and there was one nice moment when there was four of my students selected to push on to a more advanced class. I heard people asking them where they had trained, and they're all pointing at that guy over there. We're with him since we were 7, 8 years of age, and we're 16 years with him now. And oh, he's a great instructor, and you know he brought us all here. And you know, kind of okay, well, that's nice to hear. You know, and so, but it's something that I'm not very. I find it hard to accept the praise because at the end of the day,
but it's true, right?
Yeah, but if they've become accomplished martial artists, I've done my job right, and obviously I was taught well to pass it on. So it's not necessarily me. It's I've just passed on what I've learned.
Just be grateful. Just be gratified by the emotion. It's good, man.
I'm really humbled by it. I'm really grateful by it. But I don't like it put in the public light as such, and me put in the spotlight. Yeah. I just, you know,
Try to eliminate that thought. It's not, you're not self-aggrandizing.
Yeah.
Can I just interject there too, just based on that? If you take someone that was, say, brought up in a disadvantaged family or something like that, and they make good of themselves despite the disadvantaged family, I think when Lenny says, yeah, I'm just passing on what I learned, I think that's being humble. I think you can learn an art from someone that can teach you the art, but that doesn't mean whoever's teaching you is a good instructor or a good role model, and it's up to you to take what you learned and use your own individual personality and be a better, say, instructor than your previous one, and kind of use your own manners and personality and stuff like that to continue on despite what you may have learned. Like, if it was great instruction and you're passing that on, that's fine, but I don't think all the kudos go to the instructor before you, because if you had a bad instructor, that doesn't mean you're going to be a bad instructor. You can turn that around, learn from the previous mistakes and better that going forward.
I don't have too much more to say because it's been covered by most of you. Yeah, no, I don't think anybody's ever come up and said, oh, you inspired me, until Mitch said something about it tonight. But the thing is, I know...
I did too!
And you did too. I know that in the past, well, not in the past, up until a couple of years ago, I was basically known as the cop or the enforcer for a lot of reasons at the club, because that's what I did. Whether that inspired anybody or not, I don't know. I hope it did. Hopefully in a good way.
Scared the shit out of some of us.
There you go. That might have helped, hopefully. Should we conduct ourselves? Yes, absolutely. I mean, in the club, it was always under... It was under instruction, or it was for instructional purposes that I did that. Otherwise, all I tried to do was set an example for working out, man. And it was like, if that helps someone, great. If not... well, I didn't know about it, so... But yes, absolutely, 100%, like Bobby said, you must conduct yourself with the idea that you may or may not inspire someone. And whether you don't, it doesn't matter. You still have to do it. Hopefully you
but
do.
Isn't there an argument to be made, and this is kind of for everybody, that you should conduct yourself in a way that suits your own sense of ethic and your own ethos, rather than saying, well, people are watching me, so I should do a certain thing. I should react a certain way. Isn't it more organic? Isn't it more valid to say that I should conduct myself in a way that stays true to my own perspective? And whether that pisses people off or inspires people is irrelevant. I need to stay true to who I am. And screw the reaction it has in other people.
That's a pretty problematic thing to say, isn't it? Screw what anybody thinks about what I do.
Isn't that kind of the ultimate perspective? Isn't that sort of the ultimate, look, I need to stay true to who I am. And if that impacts people in a positive way or a negative way, I don't care. I'm going to do what I think is right. Isn't that what we're all striving for?
Wait a sec. There's a very fine distinction between I'm going to do what I think is right and I'm going to do what I feel like doing.
I'm not advocating that we say, I'm going to do what I feel like doing. I'm advocating that we say, I'm going to do what I think is right. And I don't care whether it inspires anybody. I don't care if it pisses anybody off. I'm just going to do what I think is right. And screw whether it inspires anybody or not.
I think as long as you're not hurting anybody in the process, if you're trying to lead by example and it's hurting somebody, then your ideals don't really fit. And you got to think of a different perspective, or don't teach, or...
The question being... Who do you stay true to? Do you stay true to yourself, or do you stay true to the people you think are looking at you as the person of...
Hang on. The obvious answer is that you stay true to yourself, but then you got to say, what is yourself? You got to have an ethical standard to which to hold yourself up to. Oh, that's a lot of twos. You have to have a moral standard to which you hold yourself, and not just claim I'm doing what I think is right. Doing what I think is right is a dangerous thing to say to yourself.
But where do you get that moral standard from? You only have your internal perspective to develop that moral standard.
I don't know where we're going here. I forget the train.
If we're being true to being martial artists, the way we've all come up, it's based on respect, humility, and respect for each other. So you're going to pass it on naturally. You're not going to suddenly break away and say, "I don't give a shit what these people think."
No, but that it sounds. Sorry, Lenny. It sounds like you're reciting a formula. And Mitch's point is that that's not what we should be doing. We should be examining ourselves internally and making sure we're acting properly as far as our definition of proper. My point is that not everybody can do that, but my point is also that there is an ethical standard by which we know instinctively we ought to be living up to, which may or may not be the case. We may or may not be living up to this.
In a way, Bob, you're right, but it's still, like Lenny said, you want to project a sense of a somewhat humility and dedication and stuff, and it's not so much that you're not putting on airs to say, oh, look at me, I'm so humble. It's you just, the way we were all brought up, you end up with that humility, and you don't want to start saying, you know, beat the chest and that sort of thing. So that is where you come from. And Mitch, if you don't come from there, where do you come from?
Mitch, yeah, hang on. Mitch is saying be true to yourself, but Mitch, what if you're not a humble guy?
Look, none of us can do anything other than that which our nature tells us to do. Whether that's good or bad, whether it's right or wrong, all we can do is be true to who we are. And I'm torn on this between how much impact should we settle on ourselves based on perceptions of other people, and how much should we just be true to what we believe? That's what this all comes down to. Should I act in a way that I, through whatever intellectual process I go through, determine is the way that I should act, versus how should I act measured against what other people think of me? That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
I kind of agree with Darren. Just keep it simple. Just lead by example and don't be a dick. That's pretty much the way I look at it.
I get that, and I don't disagree. But let's drill down just a teeny tiny bit deeper. What do you mean? What does it mean, don't be a dick? Explain what that statement means.
I guess, you know, like if you're thinking about in a class environment, don't belittle people. Don't expect them to do things that you wouldn't do yourself.
Okay, but what if you have a student who's an arrogant jackass? And I think we can all look back in our martial arts teaching career to students who were arrogant jackasses, and maybe that person needs to be brought down a notch or two. So it's not so simple.
That's when you send Richie in.
That's usually what happens.
Exactly. But that's my point, is look, it's easy to use such trite terms as don't be a dick. You're right, don't be a dick. But sometimes being a dick is the right thing to do. Is it what makes a good instructor or a good martial artist is somebody who takes what they feel is the right thing to do and measures it or filters it through what's right for the student and does that thing. And maybe, one more point. One person's you're being a dick is another person saying you're a great instructor. This is what makes this such a minefield. Go.
If you're really a dick, you don't know you're a dick. That's the problem.
It's hard for us to answer objectively because none of us are assholes.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Excuse me. No.
Okay.
Hello.
Let me rephrase that.
Not
none of us
on the dojo floor.
None of us are conceited, headstrong, egotistical guys that get out on a dojo floor and beat the chest and say, you know, I am God. So it's hard for us to answer objectively because we're not that person. And there's a fine line between being a dick and instilling what's correct. If someone's been an asshole and an egotistical dick on the floor in front of you, and he needs to be taken back down a peg or two and put back in his box, it doesn't mean you're being a dick. It means you're instilling what's correct and proper protocol and the way people should be. Yeah, so you're staying true to values and you're staying true to yourself by being, you know, the enforcer.
Everybody here is taught at some point, whether it's their own club or teaching, has anybody encountered, which I have, has anybody encountered a student that is actually better than you are and they've questioned what you're teaching because they know more and you have to explain, you might know more about this technique, but you're not an instructor, you're not the head coach, you're not this, and you have to kind of sit down and explain that to them in a class setting where somebody's questioning what you're doing, and it's not like a white belt questioning the black belt's teaching. It's somebody that's gone through the training and is actually saying, why are you doing this?
I don't think I've come across that. I can't, just trying to think hard
but,
there.
Mitch,
I,
what I was going to say was, Mitch,
yeah, Rick,
is you're putting the argument forward, but I know for a fact that what you're doing is you're arguing for the argument's sake, because I've known you basically since you started in martial arts.
Not basically, since I've started.
Okay. Your work ethic and your practice and the way you work out is very, very good. So anybody that looks to you and tries to emulate what you do will be a good martial artist.
That's flawed logic. That's not true.
Well, no, listen to me. So you saying that, no, I should do what I feel like because I know what you feel like is doing the right thing because you do work out right.
This is a complicated question, and I wish we had another couple of hours to explore it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, guys. Look, I'm gonna pull this conversation back. Rick, I don't want to discount what you just said. It's a fascinating topic, and I've made a note that we might do another podcast about it. But
can
I
just say one thing on Darren's question before we leave it?
Yeah.
now you're being a dick.
Oh shit! I was gonna people. Not do that anymore. God damn it!
People.
No, I don't know. When Darren ahead, was like, saying about, you know, have you ever had anyone question me? Me personally, I don't know if you guys are the same. If I have people come into the club, like you guys rocked in from Canada a few years ago, I knew like, okay, these guys are seasoned martial artists. I would go my way not to overcomplicate things, but go my way to stay in my comfort zone, and I would also invite them to show, like I did with you, Mitch, to take some of the class that night, and at least that way you're not coming across as, hey, I'm in charge, you guys are nothing, because at the end of the day, we all come from different backgrounds, so that would be my way of getting around that, if I sensed that somebody was had it, you know, good skill set and basis.
And just to leverage off that, just the other night, Jason and I were working out, and we were doing shin kicks, and I don't do those. Like, Jason has so much more experience than I do in a broader perspective of training. Like, he's done Muay Thai, and we were doing some, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, we were doing those shin kicks. That's pretty much a Muay Thai thing, am I right?
Yeah, leg kicks, yeah.
Yeah, and I was completely screwing it up. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So to answer the question, yeah, like very recently I've had someone in front of me who for a long time I perceived as someone who was, how do I phrase it? Not a student of mine, but less experienced. But he plainly showed that he was better than me in a number
more
of ways.
More experienced than that,
yeah. Yeah. I couldn't walk for 2 days because I couldn't. I'm not kidding. I was limping like an older man than I actually am because of that training. So I think it's all a matter of, look, we all bump into people and we all have to adjust our perspectives on the people we train with, even if we've trained with them for years, because everybody grows and everybody learns more and everybody brings something new to the table. So the thing is, look, I want to get off this topic because I want to ask one more question, and that's going to pull this to an end. Here's the question once around the table, and I'm going to go in the order of the people as they are listed on my clean feed here so I don't miss anybody. So here's the question.
I'm first.
No, you're not. You're third.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the notes.
Okay, so here's the question. What gets you off in terms of training? What really gets your blood boiling in a good way, Jason?
Just the art of it. You know, the There's been some guys who I follow, like in mixed martial arts, and a lot of them talk about the art of fighting, I guess you could say. You know, doing the techniques in a correct way, putting things together well. So that's the thing that really kind of gets me going with martial arts is just the art of it.
For me, in recent years, it's been trying to explore different martial arts, having spent so long at one, and realizing I'm only scratching the surface, and combine that with an absolutely tough worker that's going to push you physically, mentally, to the absolute limit, and technically. That does it for me.
In karate, it's makiwara. I just am in love with it. In judo, it's just a fucking technique, perfectly executed. Mitch, you know what I'm talking about. Aikido, exactly the same as judo. Just flowing into the opponent's thing and doing your thing. Kendo, man. God damn it, they're so fast. I have no words. That's it.
Rick.
Well, right now, as far as I'm concerned, if I can still work out, I'm doing all right, because some of the things that I've gone through in the last 4 or 5 years have kind of worn out my body. And as long as I can still work out and do kata, but I still, surprise, surprise, still like doing tension and still like doing power, man. That is
a surprise, Rick. Like, yeah. Jesus
Christ. Rick likes
it's
doing
just,
tension.
It's just me. Huh.
Okay, Darren, go ahead, man.
Unfortunately, Lenny took the words right out of my mouth. I didn't know what order it was going to be in, but I was going to say exactly what Lenny said. It's like the whole, not inspiration, but what keeps you going is just there's so much shit out there that I'm interested in that I'd like to try out. And then the other side is there's nothing like going back somewhere where it's just the basics and it's a good, solid, hard workout. Might not be technically advanced or anything, but you're walking out of there fucked. I like a good technical workout. I like a good basic workout. And I like the aspect that there's, especially nowadays, if you're living in a large enough city, that there's lots of different stuff out there that you can learn. And then just to add up, because Lenny already said what I was going to say, what Richie was saying, I've dabbled in a couple arts over the years that are reasonably non-physical. As long as you have coordination, reflexes, and a mindset, there's lots of martial arts out there that are really intriguing that you can do. And I found them interesting back when I was physical, and I still try to be physical now, but I'm not being deterred in any way with my age, because I think when I get less physical, I'm going to revisit those arts that I tried before that aren't as physical, but equally intriguing. And I'm actually looking forward to actually being forced into going back to what I thought was interesting before. So I don't feel dejected that my body is starting to give out. I'm actually looking forward to having an excuse to go try out these other arts that aren't as physical.
You know, it's funny. For myself, I've always been a very physically minded person when I was younger. And I'm not sure what the reason for this is. I wasn't very good at sports in high school. I didn't start getting into physical stuff until probably almost my last year of high school, where I started jogging and I started weight training and blah, blah, blah. So on a very primal, non-intellectual level, I just like the feeling of working out. But what really gets me going is taking a martial art I know and I'm comfortable with and getting out on the dojo and just going at it. Because that's, I don't get to do that very often, where we just get to get on the floor and just fucking throw. And I really, really miss that. And that's what gets me going. When Bob and I were running the club together, and Bob, when you and I would do, we would do randori, we'd do judo, and we would be hardcore trying to throw each other. Whether I got thrown or whether I did the throw was irrelevant to me. It was just the feeling of actually taking all this stuff that I've been spending years and years trying to figure out and put it into some practical fucking application. Man, there's nothing I enjoy more than that. Anyway, all right, guys. So we're going to bring this one to a close. Let's go around the table one more time. Any last thoughts and inspirations or any other of the tangents we've gone off on tonight? Let's go from the ground up. Darren, what do you think?
I was thinking, as you were saying that, I'm thinking, what would I say? But as far as I'm concerned, we seem to have covered everything. Like I can't think of anything to add to what we haven't already said. It's just, I think, if anything else, maybe there's been a few things that people have said that re-sparks an inspiration. And as you said, like, sometimes you kind of, you become complacent in your training or complacent in your thoughts of training and thinking, okay, I'm at this level and why would I continue on? I'm not competing. Is there really any interest in it? But I think just a conversation like this kind of re-sparks that. So, yeah, I do want to go back again. I do want to train hard again. I do want to learn something else. And whatever the reasoning behind it is irrelevant. It's just, again, the inspiration. And I suppose if I was going to add something to it, is inspiration can happen at any point. You might not be inspired today, but you might be inspired tomorrow.
Might be inspired tomorrow. Exactly. And look, just to that point, when Jason and I went on the floor and sparred the other night, I wasn't expecting to be inspired like I was, but I was. Anyway, Rick, any last comments?
It's inspirational just even to, you know, sit and talk with all you guys, because you guys have been around. I know I haven't known Lenny quite as long as I've known all the rest of you, but Lenny, the only regret I have about my visit to Ireland is that I did not go to that workout. But anyway, the other thing is, Darren, I like what you were saying about the different martial arts. I may have to look into a couple of them in case I can't keep doing this forever. Although I don't think that's true. But anyway, guys, it's been a good night. It's been a good night. I really enjoyed this.
The next podcast is self-delusion among black men.
I can do this forever.
Exactly. Not. Okay, Bob, any last thoughts?
Yeah, regarding the talking points. I just wanted to say I had a great time, that's all. And hey, Jason, good to see you. Good to talk to you.
Same to you, Bob.
Yeah.
Okay. Len.
Yeah, look, we're coming up on nearly a year of this podcast, and every week we go away going, rethinking all your philosophies and all your thoughts on martial arts. And that in itself, everyone on this podcast has been inspirational in either through meeting you, speaking, which is getting recommendations, exploring different stuff. And that in itself just keeps the hunger alive. So kudos to you, Mitch, for this, because, you know, it's at a stage now where you don't want to miss a Friday night, because you just know you're going to have a fantastic conversation about stuff you're interested in. So fair play.
Okay, Jason, any last comments, brother?
Just thanks, guys, for having the podcast. I enjoy listening. I'm really glad I was able to join today. I want to come on more. It's been great.
Okay, my last comments are, look, I've loved this podcast as I love them all. Jason, awesome to have you on finally. Yeah. I know it's such a pain to try and coordinate this. Jason's going back to Japan in a couple of weeks. I'd love to get one more podcast in while he's here. And the next one's going to be a big deal. The next one's going to be the 24th podcast, which will be the one-year anniversary. So that's going to be a little bit of a thing for me. So in terms of tonight, I got to tell you, I achieved the goal I set out for myself, which was just to feel better. I was feeling kind of dark, and so thank you guys for sharing your stories, sharing your perspectives. It kind of bolstered my own. So once again, folks, thank you so much for listening. I'm Mitch Maxine. This is the No Mind Podcast. Any comments or questions to my personal Facebook page, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, or drop me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you coming on. Jason, great to have you, brother. We're gone. We're out. Thanks so much. We are done.
Bye. Oh, God, I got to pee so fucking badly.